ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We're reading 10th canto, 1st chapter, verse 24.
Vasudeva kalananta kalananta sahasra vadana swarat agrato bhavita devo harehe priya chikirshaya.
Translation: the foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarshan, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarshan will appear as Baladev just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. Purport: Sri Baladev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. He is equal in supremacy to the Supreme Godhead, yet whenever Krishna appears, Sri Baladev appears as his brother, sometimes elder and sometimes younger. When Krishna appears, all his plenary expansions and other incarnations appear with him. This is elaborately explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This time, Baladev would appear before Krishna as Krishna's elder brother. Prabhupada ki jai. So, first of all, I was tricked into giving this class. Today, Brajachandra Prabhu is scheduled. I don't know how it happened, but I'm grateful and I hope I can serve you by trying to share whatever came to my mind in the last 1 hour, and I quickly jotted down on these post-its. I'm studying something, and I'll try to relate what I am studying with what this verse has to say. Going back to the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we start the invocation by saying, Janmadi Asya Yataha, which Sripad Sridhar Swami explains as the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material cosmos. But Sripad Jiva Goswami in Vishwanath Chakravarti goes a step further and says Janma there does not mean the Janma of the world, but Janma of Krishna. Adi means etc., means Leelas of Krishna. Yataha means from whom. So birth, activities from whom everything comes, right? That's what it literally means, according to Jiva Goswami. And we have waited through 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam, where we have gone through Sarga, Visarga, and all the 10 topics of the Bhagavat, to come to a point where we're entering what Jiva Goswami indicated in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. Janmadi Asya Yataha means birth, pastimes, activities of the Supreme Lord. So now we are in the heart of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the inner meaning of the Bhagavat. And specific to this verse, and that was the context, in specific to this verse, it says that Lord Balaram sometimes appears before Krishna, sometimes after Krishna. The next verse says, the potency of the Lord known as Vishnu Maya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only Lord Balaram is as good as the Supreme Person, Vishnu Maya is also as good as the Supreme Person. We'll also appear with the Lord. This potency acting in different capacities captivates all the world. So Lord Balaram and Lord Maya comes. Right? And I'll try to keep it simple because I'm reading something very simple. From Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he calls it Sahaja Jnana. And the meaning of Sahaja means easy, and Jnana is wisdom. He says, the process of Krishna Bhakti is actually very easy. It is Sahaja Jnana. He says, there are 12 parts to this Sahaja Jnana, and I'll go through them one by one and try to highlight on this verse. He said, all of us are conditioned in some form or the other, right? But if we have the Shubha Buddhi, the auspicious intelligence, to sit down and for a moment forget everything we have learned, you know, make ourselves tabula rasa, blank slate, and try to think, who am I, what am I doing here? He says 12 answers will come. The first answer will be, I am. If you just sit down casually, coolly, no shastra, no coaxing, no classrooms, no university, no parents, no MTV, nothing. Simple idea will come up, I am. You know? And he says that in the same book, he says that the Buddhists claim that I am not, neti. He said, but I met a Buddhist from Southeast Asia, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, a few days back. That was almost a century back, and said, so what is your religion about? And he said, you know, I'm a human being and I have to act in some capacity, right? I want to be happy. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes those comments and writes in his book, said, even a Buddhist whose philosophy is I am not, by casual knowledge he knows I am. Right? He said, the first thing is I am. Anybody who says, neti neti, hold a gun on their forehead, he will get scared. Because it is our innate understanding that I am. Right? The second thing Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is, I continue to be. And he calls them the axiomatic facts of spiritual life. He said, like in geometry, you have axiomatic facts. A point is a point which has no dimensions, right? A straight line, it is the shortest distance between two points. Axiomatic facts, you know, these are self-evident and therefore we do not challenge them. He said, self-evident facts about spiritual life, first, I am, second is, I will continue to be, right? No matter who says what, if you just sit down and think, I was, I will be, I will continue to be. That's the second Sahaja Jnana, right? Third Sahaja Jnana, he says, I am happy. I am essentially a happy person. Only situations around me become unfavorable from time to time and something goes wrong. But essentially, I'm a happy person, right? When conditions are unfavorable, I become unhappy, right? But consider this. Unfavorable. There is a prefix, un. Natural condition is favorable. We add a un before. It becomes unfavorable. Happy is the original word. We add un before that. Right? We are happy. We add un before. It becomes unhappy. So the third condition, axiomatic fact of spiritual life, is that we are happy. Fourth, my happiness comes from a particular place. He said, if you just casually think without going into Shastra, going anywhere, my happiness comes from a particular place. It can be inside, it can be outside, but there is a particular place, right? I am not Swayambhu happy. It comes from somewhere. If I try to be happy by myself sitting in one place next to the Ganga in Rishikesh, sometimes I have to come down. And here is the point where we can explain this verse. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam is a detailed description of Krishna and his friends and associates and devotees. Now, in the same book, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes different kinds of atheism and why people become atheists, Mayavadis, Shunyavadis. And he explains that only those people who are completely frustrated and have no hope go to Advaita. And in my own experience, it is like, have you seen teenagers getting very angry and just getting into the bathroom and shutting the door? I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to eat tonight. Right? They just shut the door. Right? But how long can you remain in the bathroom? There is a limit. Another example is, if you hold our fist, like this. You know, how long will we be able to hold on to our fist like that? It is not a natural condition. It is not a sahaja condition. It is not our normal condition. It is not our constitutional condition. Constitutional condition is to relax, just be ourself. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, our constitutional condition, just to relax and be ourself, is Krishna Bhakti. Right? He said, because we know that happiness comes from some other place, we cannot just try to do something with ourselves and be happy. Right? Fifth point, we realize when we understand that happiness comes from some other place, we realize that I have to take shelter of that source of happiness. Right? And this is the point that the Jadavadis get wrong, the materialists. Mayavadis get wrong is that, you know, there is no happiness, let me finish it. That's Shunyavad and Advaitavad. Jadavad is, I know there is happiness out there, let me find out. And they go to buy milk in a wine shop. Right? There is a commercial in the United States where, I'm not supposed to say blonde jokes here, but a girl goes to a library and says, can I have some French fries and Coke? And the librarian whispers, this is a library. I said, okay, can I have some French fries and Coke? She thinks she'll get French fries and Coke in the library. There's nothing you can do about it. Right? She thinks just by softening down her tone, like the other person, she'll get French fries and Coke. Huh? And this is the level Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Jadavadis get stuck in. Right? They know that I have to take shelter of that source of happiness. But they usually get their source of happiness in Kanaka Kamini. Right? Wealth and sense gratification. Then he said, once we start thinking about this source of happiness and we realize that every time we try it, we are failing. Then we realize, I am an eternal follower of that reservoir of happiness. That source of happiness is eternal, and my relationship with that is eternal. Then sambandha gyan starts. Right? And for this, there is a little story that should highlight this point about a monk who was sitting on the bank of a river and meditating all day. All day. And his desire to meditate was to be able to walk on water one day. He wanted to walk on water. So he would meditate from 3 a.m. in the morning till 12 a.m. at night, and then he would meditate again the next 3 hours. And he would take one step on the river, and he realized that he couldn't float. So years and years and years passed by. And he did not give up his idea of walking on water and achieving it through meditation, because on the other side of the river, he saw a few monks who kept walking on the river. You know, they were daily passengers. Just cross the river very casually. And they had their ashram on the other side. And he said, you know, I take a boat, which is such an insult. I should be able to walk like them. And every day he is practicing his meditation, and the monks on the other side are talking to each other and asking each other, should we finally tell him where the stones are? Should we finally tell him where the stones are? So, you know, in our innate understanding, there are certain obstacles that come to us when we get stuck. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that then you may need help of a guru. Then you realize that I have an eternal relation with that person. You realize that there are stones between you and Krishna, right? But Krishna has not come into the picture yet. So seventh point is there, that source of joy has to be beautiful, right? And have you heard of John Keats, the English poet? At the end of his life, he wrote a poem called The Ode to a Grecian Urn, where he said, beauty is truth, truth, beauty. That is all you need to know. Right? In terms of his own meditation, rational understanding, he could come up to that level. He said, that truth, there is an absolute truth, and that truth is Ananda Murti, its beauty. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you can come up to this level after you have crossed Jaravad. So the eighth point is that beautiful, whatever that is so beautiful that I have no power to leave it. No matter what I do, I may hate it, I may love it, but I cannot ignore it. Right? So he says all kinds of Shunyavad, Advaitavad, Jaravad, they are basically a mind in denial of that beauty. Right? The moment one chills and starts thinking, the conception changes. Right? Even in Islam, where they are so much against deity worship and image worship, I have traveled somewhat in the Middle East for, you know, giving Harikatha and stuff. It's a very risky place. Very, very risky place. One time we were having a program at a camp in Sharjah, and right in the middle of a class, somebody gave me a cell phone. He said, Prabhu, get out of there right now. I said, well, what happened is the police is on. And if they catch you, it's not a very happy experience. It's almost 50 degrees Celsius, right? Water would be half-boiled. And they have their prisons, only four walls, no ceiling. Right? It's not the ideal place to be. If you want to experience hell, go with a few Bhagavatams to Dubai airport. You'll figure it out. And in interior Saudi Arabia, there is a brand of Islam called Wahhabi Islam. Al-Wahhab was a person a few hundred years back who decided that whatever Muslims were practicing, going to these dargahs and shrines, is unbona fide. He completely banned all kind of images. That means you cannot even carry a picture of your own family. If they catch you, Hare Krishna. Right? And women, whether you're Hindu or Muslim, you have to go out on the street with accompanying a male who knows you wearing burqa. They're so strict. But even in Wahhab Islam, when they read the Quran, they say Allah has eyes, Allah has beautiful eyes, Allah has beautiful hands. Every morning when they do their azan, they say Allah is looking at the world. Right? He is observing. Allah feels love, Allah feels gratification, Allah feels anger. Right? No matter, you know, Allah is beautiful. They would not want to represent that beauty. But theoretically, even in Islam, they accept that Allah is beautiful. Right? And in Judaism, they are even more strict. Early Judaism, you know, from which Christianity and Islam came, they said, thou shalt not use thy Lord's name in vain. Right? That was one of the commandments. And they went to be so strict that anybody who uttered the name of the Lord was stoned to death. In Judaism, the name of the Lord is called, it's not even uttered, it's described. They call it a technical word called tetragrammaton. Right? It's a combination of four letters. Yod, he, vah, he. I would be stoned to death now if I was in Israel. But yod, he, vah, he. And anybody who says that, right, it's an offense. And they are so strict. If you write the name of the Lord on a piece of paper, you have to respect it like a deity. The Jews are so strict. Right? And they say that these names are the most beautiful things on earth. There is no truth beyond the names of God. And in Islam also, there are 99 names of Allah. And Muhammad said, whoever chants these names, we'll go back to him. So the conception is there. But through the first few, you know, they didn't have the first few stages of Sahaja Jnana. Right? Therefore, misconceptions have come in. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I have no power to abandon that reservoir of happiness. So no matter what I do, if I don't connect with that reservoir of happiness, something will go blank in my life. Right? And the ninth point is, my present condition is miserable. So the next stage in Sahaja Jnana is, once you've realized that there is some beauty out there, there is some truth out there, I am, I shall forever be. Right? But right now, something has gone wrong. 10th point he says is, my job in this life is to abandon this condition. Something has gone wrong somewhere. My job in this life is to abandon this condition. Right? 11th point is, when I realize that, I also figure out this world is not my home. Same realization in practically all other religions. Jesus Christ said, this world is like a bridge. Cross it. Don't try to build your house on it. Right? So I said, this world is not my home. At that point, that person should realize that you cannot get French fries in a library. And 12th point is, I don't get elevated in this world. I don't get elevated in my life if I get elevated in this world. I may be getting elevated, you know, things may be expanding. But in a way, this is some kind of a simulated reality. Right? My reality is somewhere else. I won't be able, this is not my home. And just by decorating what I think to be my home, I won't be getting connected to that bliss. Right? So the conclusion of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, just by our common sense, he said, even if you have no faith in Shastra, no faith in Guru, no faith in anything, no faith in television, no faith in anything, he said, if you keep quiet and sit down and think, who am I? What am I doing here? These points will come in your head. You don't need to belong to any religion. You don't need to practice anything. This is the innate knowledge present in our soul by default, and therefore it is the axiomatic facts of spiritual life. Right? And then he goes on to say further, and this is where this verse becomes relevant. He said, when I figure all that out, when I see that Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Murti, I also want to become Akhila Rasamrita Murti. Right? That is the final snare of Maya. He's a great guy. I see President Obama, I said, no, oh, I'm next. Right? I see a rich guy, oh, I'm next. Right? He said, that is a tendency of our mind also. It also comes sahaja. That is sahajiya. Right? That is sahajiya. He said, but the thing is, if you think deeply about it, he said, you don't want to be sugar, you want to taste sugar. Right? Have you taken sugar, sweet balls? It's very sweet. If you become sugar, sugar is not sweet anymore. Right? If we become sugar, we cannot taste sugar. If you want to taste sugar, we have to maintain distinct identity from sugar. Sahaja, easy. He said, if you want to taste that Akhila Rasamrita, we cannot be Akhila Rasamrita. We have to be different from Akhila Rasamrita. Right? And that is why, you know, Krishna, in order to experience that Rasa Amrita, he expands and he comes in different forms. If he was just happy by himself, then he wouldn't need, but he needs that kind of exchange, right? And because he's constantly asking us to come and join him, he has, by default, programmed us in that way. That even if you don't know anything, even if you're 100% conditioned, if you just sit down and think about it, there cannot be any other conclusion but loving service to Krishna. Right? And that is why Maya comes, Balaram comes. And last point for today is, you know, everything we see around us, and this is a paper I gave many years back at an ecological conference. I said, everything we see around us, in our mind, we either divide it into Maya or Krishna. If you read Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adikhanda, Vrindavan Das Thakur says that everything that is used in the service of the Lord is expansion of Lord Balaram. Same leather, if used in our shoe, it is Maya. If used on Vridanga, it is Vishnu Tattva. It takes a split second for something to be engaged in the Lord, with the Lord personally. All his paraphernalia, the simhasan, his bed, his umbrella, his shoes, everything is an expansion of Vishnu Tattva, right? You take it away from the altar, use it in some other purpose, it becomes Maya, Right? And therefore, when I looked at these two verses, Lord Brahma says that Balaram is coming with him, Maya is also coming with him. Right? It's the two aspects of how the Lord functions in the world. So that's what I had to offer for today. I don't know if I could satisfy you. But if you have any comments, questions, we can talk about it. If you want to talk about Gopal Bhatta Goswami, I have something interesting to mention. But that's fine. If you can speak up loud, then I'll repeat your question. Whether pure devotion comes after self-realization or just like that? Can I give you a small example? When you learn to ride a bicycle, how do you balance left or right? You just get on the bike, push the pedal, go. When we start serving the Lord, whether we realize it or not, devotion has already started. You know, even with Ajnata Sukriti, devotion has started. Right? I mean, there's instances of so many devotees. They have done something simple, very simple. You know, devotion started. Even sometimes adversely coming to devotees, devotion can start. You know the story of that Serbian army man who was about to shoot a devotee? See, he just pointed his gun at his forehead. Something happened, his devotional life started. Krishna is bhavagrahi. That means even if we have no qualifications, we're doing something, Krishna will take our bhava. Mantra hina, kriya hina, bhakti hina, janardana, tat pujita maya deva paripurnam tadastume. But even if you have no bhava, Krishna is saragrahi. Even if you have no feelings, and Kamsa is coming up very soon. You know, he was also one kind of Krishna consciousness. Right? So, moment we start serving, at least in the association of devotees, devotion starts. It takes time to... Actually, devotion is in the heart. That's also what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the same book. Inherently, we have pure devotion in our heart. It's just that it's covered. Right? And these 12 points, he said, we are trying hard to look through our glasses and even then we will see light. We may see colored light, but we will see light. It's there. It's just uncovering. So, Sarabhut Prabhu said, if you simply by meditating, if you can get the highest truth, where is the role of the spiritual master? So, first of all, this thing, he says that even if one does not accept spiritual master, shastra, anything, right, one is completely dunderhead. Even then, if he thinks, you know, deeply, he will get this. But by the time, you know, one comes to the, that's why I said the story of the stones. By the time one says, you know, one realizes that I have to be connected to that source of joy, one needs help, right? And the other thing is, Krishna is Chaitya Guru in our hearts. So if you are sincere, you know, Guru will come. There cannot be bhakti without Guru, right? It's also, I mean, expanding on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's idea, whenever we want to learn something, we go to a person who is an expert. That's also Sahaja Gyan in a way, right? We want to learn harmonium, we see who is playing harmonium best. We go to that person, you know. We want to learn cooking, he said, you know, this food is very good. Give him the recipe. So it's common sense that way. Stop. So... Huh? Oh, 9:15. Okay. So I'm really stuck. I had made a little note here about Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I'm sure you know the story of Radharaman and Venkat Bhatta and Mahaprabhu's association with Gopal Bhatta Goswami. I wanted to share something practical we are doing to maintain their legacy. By glorifying Gopal Bhatta Goswami, I hope to glorify Radha Gopinath Temple too. So in 2001, my spiritual master pushed me in a certain kind of a service, which is a very complicated service. It's not easy. 100% chances of actually getting deviated. It's like walking on the razor's edge. But the essence of the service is to study the history of our parampara, study the history of our movement, and present it to the scholarly community. And as that service started, I started doing my research, and I went to Oxford University for some time. Right now, I teach at the University of Chicago, and I have to come back to India, you know, shuttling between the two worlds to fulfill his desire. And the main aspect of this seva is to find out the authentic sources of our tradition, right? If you want to see how the Kanjivaram, the Advaitins, have maintained their tradition, right? It's a pakka tradition. They have Brahmins, they have their Shastra, they are studying nicely. If you want to see how Christians have maintained their tradition, you can go to Vatican. There are miles and miles of books, the history of their movement. And Roman Catholicism is the largest religion on earth, and they have some of the best scholars on earth, the Jesuits. As Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we come from a tradition which saw the likes of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami. But due to certain inevitable but unwanted events in history, our tradition got lost. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his companion, Shishir Kumar Ghosh and others, they started basically, you know, reviving and, you know, rediscovering Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So my seva became going out in different Shripats. You know what Shripats are? The different homes of all these devotees, and collecting manuscripts, collecting Gaudiya Vaishnava manuscripts. If they don't give it to us, at least we scan them and we keep a copy. So far, for example, we have located the first Chaitanya Bhagavat written by Vrindavan Das Thakur. It is in a village called Denur in Bengal. So the family who has it does not know how to take care of it. And yesterday we were discussing with some of my friends. Most people who own these manuscripts consider this as their family possession. Like, you know, all our homes have some old legal documents and old pictures, and, you know, people come out, we don't know who that is, you know, kar pardada ka pardada tha. Right? We have no idea. For them, our history is like that. So for the last 7-8 years, I've been going around preserving these manuscripts. We have made a research center in Kolkata. Called the Bhaktivedanta Research Center. After 7 years of struggle, we got hold of the personal library of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, which was maintained by his secretary. And we had some amazing finds there, one of which includes the personal diaries of Bhaktisiddhanta from 1904 to 1936, where you get an intimate personal account of his life, and you see how he was developing his mission, what his mood was. We have some letters and diaries from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, some of his other disciples, not in the Saraswat Parampara, had his diaries where Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains his mood and realization. We came across some songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur which is not known in the devotee community. He wrote it, he kept the manuscript, he never published it. So practically after 100 years, we are opening those books and seeing, okay, this is what his plan was, this is what he wanted to do, these are his songs, right? I came across a very touching letter of Bhaktivinoda Thakur which he wrote on his deathbed, saying, "My dear Bimala," that is his son, "I am dying and I have one last desire. I know my life will be successful if I can close my eyes after seeing a pure devotee. If I can just take darshan of a pure devotee and close my eyes, not even holy names, not even Harinam, deities. Just let me see a pure devotee. Before I close my eyes, I'll consider my life successful. If you cannot personally come, at least send somebody you know." Because at that point, Bhaktisiddhanta was chanting his rounds in Navadvipa, Mayapur, right? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a letter saying, if you cannot personally come to me, at least send me somebody. And then we came across some letters, it's not at the BRC, but other places, some letters between Narottam Thakur and others, you know, Ramchandra Kaviraj, right, where, you know, they are writing to each other, you know, in old paper. 5 years back, I was staying in the VTA, and I was here for a few months, and then after that, I went to Oxford, and I was doing some research on Jagannath Puri. And some of the things that led was letters that were sent between Ramananda Roy and Advaita Acharya. Because after Mahaprabhu left the planet, Ramananda Roy was worried how he will explain Mahaprabhu's departure to the devotees in Bengal. And that time there were no cell phones, no internet, no email, right? Few years before that, Sher Shah Suri had built up the highway system and the postal system. So sending letters were common, right? So we kept searching, and we knew it was in Jagannath Puri, but after a long time, when we actually got access to it, you know, we heard that, you know, it's there, and it was all turned into dust. There's nothing in there, right? So in a way, we are running against time. These are precious documents which will give faith to Vaishnavas for next several hundred years. You know, we are all little bed bugs. We'll be gone in a few years, you know. We may look young, at least I feel that way. I may look young, but practically one-third or two-fifths of our life is gone, right? Another three-fifths is left. Out of that last 10 years, God knows what will happen, you know. To die, you need to have at least some body part going wrong, right? If you take care of your health, even then something will happen, right? Eyes have already started going bad. We won't be able to read these books very long. So my mission in life right now is to collect these materials, digitize them, preserve it for the sake of the devotees for n number of generations to come. Because, you know, we may theoretically hear about Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, we may read or hear that Rupa Goswami's handwriting looked like pearls. But imagine holding the first manuscript of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that Rupa Goswami himself wrote, and you don't have to hear, you see. They look like pearls, right? So there are some manuscripts in Vrindavan with different people, and there are some in Bengal. And over the last 2 years, we've had a team of people go out and look for these books. Sometimes the people are not favorable because of some experiences they've had with devotees in the past. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they allow us to scan, sometimes they keep us coming back for over 2-3 years with nothing happening. It's a hit and miss scene. Last year, we came across a Babaji in Navadvip who had a bulk of manuscripts, but he was a little transcendental. He felt that these manuscripts were inviting mosquitoes in his kutir, so he threw them away, right? And from what I have heard and seen, whatever little I have seen, I'm pretty confident that there were manuscripts from Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti there. So, you know, we may talk about our acharyas, we may study our acharyas, but here is a living legacy that they have given us. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they have given us a legacy, right? And they have some expectations from us. At least that's what I feel. Their expectation is we will get trained and we get qualified to read their books. If they knew that they had the knowledge, If they knew that nobody is going to read their books, they would have rather spent their time doing bhajan. That's what they enjoyed better, right? Writing books in that period was an austerity. In the initial phases, writing on palm leaf manuscripts was a very difficult thing, because in palm leaves you don't write. You dry the leaf, first you boil it, then you dry it, right, in the sun, and then you scribe, like you scribe on stone, you scribe on palm leaf, and then you take soot, like charcoal, and you rub it over it and the letters come up. Imagine using a pen where you have to drill holes in your paper all the time. What will happen to your hands, right? And after some time, they started making natural paper, which was, you know, from plant fiber. But even that was a laborious process that took, you know, weeks. They had to bury it underground, right in the sun. The ink, making the ink was difficult. You used, you know, some indigo, you know, indigo, neel that we use in our clothes. Then you use charcoal and soot and gandh, that little silvery thing that we make laddus out of. You boil it, it becomes a liquid. Gandh is used so that the letters don't come off paper. Right? Making paper, making ink, then writing all that. And they were not only making one copy each. We came across a manuscript of Mana Shiksha, Guru Goshthe Goshthala Ishu and all that. So there were two pages. First few verses. Second verses were on the second page, third verse was on the back of the first page, you know, every even and odd numbers. And at the end it was signed Rupa. Right? That means Rupa Goswami was copying the other books. They wanted to keep several copies of them. Huh? And considering the kind of devotees Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami were, they would want to serve Madan Mohan. They would want to do their bhajan. They were constantly interacting with Krishna personally. उसका क्या जाता है अपने लिए, right? It's what difference does it make? But simply out of their compassion, they took hours out of their life. They studied so many shastras because, you know, if you read Upadeshamrita, for example, Utsaha Nischaya Dhaya Tat Tat Karma Pravartana Sadhu Sangha Sato Vritti, right? That is actually a verse from Hatha Yoga Pradipika. So what Rupa Goswami has done is pick that verse, taken yoga out, put bhakti in, Upadeshamrita. But for our sake, he studied those books. For our sake, they made paper. We don't have to make paper. We just go to the stationery store, paper pen, and then we don't even use it. They were making paper, they were writing, they were drying it, and mind you, they did not have a sheltered temple like us. They were practically out there. You know, you've seen Bhajan Kutir. So Vrindavan monsoons is not any different from Bombay monsoons. Right? Sometimes we forget the historical context. In order to understand what the Goswamis have given us, at least sometimes we should meditate on the times they were in. Going from one place to another takes hours. Right? You have to select the right kind of trees, make the right kind of suit, you know, take time out of your bhajan, do this. Right? Debates, discussions among themselves, service of the deity. It's not an easy life. Huh? So, when no devotees thought about it till recently, neither did I think about it. I wanted to be somebody, something else in my life. But like today morning, I didn't have a choice. They just pulled me in. So, 10 years back, I didn't have a choice. I was getting a career in the merchant navy. And my spiritual master was not a very, you know, relaxing person. He basically put an end to my career even before I could understand what was happening. And I was in the middle of all this, right? So I'll finish with a little joke. A train was going over a river. A little boy fell off the train. And within a minute, another guy jumped, swam and rescued the boy. Right? So everybody with train stopped, somebody pulled the chain, everybody was clapping, you know, and this guy got the Paramvir Chakra. Not a true story. Parami Chakra, and you know, everybody was giving garlands, medals, everything. And then they asked him, while, you know, when you get awards, he said, do you like to say something? And said, well, okay, if you want. And they gave him the mic and said, kuch boliye. And he said, you know, all this feels nice, but at that moment, I don't know who kicked me out of the train. The only difference is, in my case, I know who kicked me out of the train. But this is some practical service we are offering to the Goswamis. I hope they are pleased. And I couldn't have done it if I did not get the support of Maharaj, Gauranga Prabhu and others. Because when we started this project, nobody understood the value of what's going on. So, you know, Sameda going around, you know, no results, nothing. You know, where are the devotees? Where are the festivals? You know, and I thought, you know, if these things are there, festivals will happen for the next 1,000 years. So only a few people understood, and I got some shelter at Radha Gopinath Temple. I was in the VTA for months and months and months. Did not do any practical seva in the temple, and I was forgiven. I'm very grateful for that. I'm forever grateful. But I don't know if I will be able to render anything practical, but this is my service to you. And Maharaj said that as the project develops, we would like to keep a copy of all these books here. There is a plan to develop educational projects at Radha Gopinath Mandir. I met with Maharaj like a month back in Chicago, and he was saying we should do something there. Instead of focusing your energies in different places, try to focus it in Bombay. And if it is his instruction, I'm already obliged, but I'm happy to come back. Thank you. My time is up. Hare Krishna.